better for patients, better for healthcare clinicians, and better for the state's economy.
Paid for by Vermont Leads, Montpelier, Vermont.
All right, we're back. Let's give a nice home Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Reverend Chris Hingley, who is from Zimbabwe, a really beautiful country in southern Africa. It used to be go by the name of Rhodesia until its independence. And Reverend Hingley, I had the opportunity yesterday. He spoke yesterday at St. Paul's Cathedral, where I attend, and you gave a really very compelling talk about the current state of his country. But, it, you know, given what was going on there, what really my takeaway was how hopeful he was in the midst of truly hell on earth. Chris, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Very well, Mark. Thank you.
You are the rector of the Petra Schools in Bulawayo. What is the Petra Schools all about?
We're a pair of schools, primary and high, which want to offer the best possible education at the lowest possible cost to anyone who likes what they see of us. And also, we want to embrace values which are very different from the ones which are destroying our country, so that our young people will go out into the world equipped for change in a radical way.
The education system in Zimbabwe is just, it's horrific.
Well, 6 years ago, the public schools actually closed down for a year because there was no money to pay the teachers or anything else. It was built up pretty well for a few years after that, but it's really struggling now. So schools which are neither in decline nor elitist are, I think, pretty vital for the future of our country.
If you have any questions or comments for a guest, you are welcome to join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. What was it like for you growing up as a white person in Rhodesia?
Well, in some ways, it was a very idyllic childhood. But the truth is that when I was growing up, things were moving towards white people becoming very afraid of the future and therefore electing governments which became more and more divisive and protective. And so I began to be aware, I suppose, that the multiracial future, which at one time had been espoused by our governments, was slipping through our hands. And discrimination was something that was growing.
Mm-hmm. What age were you when you started figuring that out?
I guess around 14 or 15, when the government of what was then Rhodesia started talking about things like no majority rule within 1,000 years, which was quite obviously a crazy, blind, blinkered thing to say. About 10 years before that, there was real progress towards majority rule, but it was in the early 60s that the white government started retreating into that defensive mentality.
Boy, I'll never forget that image of Ian Smith's car being surrounded and him almost being torn to pieces by the crowd.
Yes, Ian Smith was a very narrow-minded man, a man who really induced fear, and as a result, the majority black population really lost hope. Instead of a peaceful transition towards a multiracial society and majority government, black people saw that that was not going to happen and began to feel that there was no option except an armed struggle to bring about real independence.
Mm-hmm. For a period of time, you did study abroad. Were you ever in Rhodesia during a period of time when you felt threatened?
Not really. As a boy, I do remember there were riots, and I do remember my parents sometimes having to drive by a back way to avoid those riots. We then did have a very ugly war leading up to independence where everyone was afraid. But I've got to say that as a white person in Zimbabwe, I've hardly ever experienced racialism directed against me as a white person. That's happened maybe two or three times, but it's not been the pattern of the last 10 or 20 years at all.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to become a priest?
It was actually during that war leading up to independence. I'd been a teacher until then, but the experience of that war was, well, on the one hand, so horrendous, but on the other hand, there were little miracles, signs of God's grace in the middle of it. And I suppose the combination of those two things led me towards being involved in pastoral ministry.
The current leader in your country, Robert Mugabe, came out of that internal struggle. He was, you know, actually considered to be, you know, really a nationalist and a freedom fighter back then. But unfortunately, it sounds like many people who get into public office that he then became, you know, drunk on the power. Did you have hope when he took over initially that this was going to work, that the country would actually function?
Well, in the weeks leading up to the election, the first post-independence election, we were terrified of Robert Mugabe. He had a name which made him really terrifying to us. And then he was elected by a landslide, and that evening he gave the most amazing speech to the nation. It was quite incredible, where he spoke of leaving the past behind, finding forgiveness and reconciliation, and going forward in a new spirit. And he not only said those things, he did the totally unexpected things, like appointing the general of the Rhodesian forces as the commander of the new Zimbabwe National Army, bringing ministers from the old government into his government. And the mood changed in 24 hours. We thought, this is going to be the leader we wanted. But as you said, over the years that changed.
What do you think happened?
I think that what happened was, for about 20 years, on the whole, Robert Mugabe allowed the country to develop. But there were two occasions in which he felt personally threatened. One was, there was an uprising in the early 80s by the rival liberation movement. And he reacted to that by bringing in the North Koreans to train a brigade in the army and to suppress that rebellion with extraordinary ferocity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other big thing that happened was that in the year 1999, that we had a referendum on giving the president almost unlimited powers, and to everyone's amazement, the electorate said no. And that was the turning point. Robert Mugabe obviously felt that his whole power was threatened, and he needed to react to that again with a very, very focused action to prevent that happening ever again.
The elections that have happened in your country, I mean, are just it's awful. I mean, it's embarrassing in many respects. It's also really frightening. I mean, one of the elections, you literally had the opposition groups decided not to participate because of their own physical safety. Can you talk about that?
Yes, our worst year in that respect was 2008. In that year, two things happened. One is the economy, after 8 years of attack, went into free fall, so that we had the highest rate of hyperinflation the world has ever known, where prices were doubling every 24 hours. And so people were in absolute desperation. A loaf of bread could easily cost $100 trillion. But the other thing that happened was that the ruling party did unleash a wave of violence. Many, many people were killed. There were running fights in the streets. And as far as I remember, it was just about a week before the election that the opposition said, we can't submit our supporters to this any longer, and we're withdrawing.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I've never understood, Chris, you know, we talk about some corrupt leaders in this world, and then we go after them, and it seems as though we might go after them more if there's oil under the ground in their country. And, you know, Robert Mugabe seems, at least to me, and I don't know about you, but has gotten a bit of a free pass by the international community. People talk about how bad he is, but no one's willing to really do anything. Why do you think that is?
That is the big question, isn't it? I think there is one valid reason. And that is, it is important that Africa sorts out its own problems. And the key there would be South Africa. And and not only South Africa, our neighbors, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique. And occasionally there have been hopeful signs that they would speak out against what's happening in Zimbabwe. But the sad thing is that that's never happened. And I think that makes it extraordinarily difficult for either the United States or any other country in the Western world to take action when they don't have support of local African countries. I mean, people say if there were oil in Zimbabwe, there would be more action. And perhaps that's true. I don't know. But I think what is beyond doubt that it's hard for the West to take action when our neighbors in Africa won't join in that action or support that action.
We're talking with Reverend Chris Hingley, who lives in Zimbabwe. You know, Nelson Mandela, how did Nelson Mandela not take this guy down?
I've often asked myself that, and I think we have. Nelson Mandela did speak out on more than one occasion. I don't know why he didn't go further than that, because he's undoubtedly, no one would doubt Nelson Mandela's courage. I can only guess that the issues that he faced in rebuilding a new South Africa after majority rule were enough for him to handle. I mean, the great spokesman in Southern Africa against injustice, both under the old apartheid regimes and under the new regimes, has been Desmond Tutu.
Yeah.
He's the only one I know who's been absolutely consistent over many years in speaking out against injustice and violence, whether perpetrated by a white government or a majority government.
Mm-hmm. How does the economy in Zimbabwe function? I mean, you mentioned this, how bread can double and the cost of an item can double in 24 hours. You know, I remember reading stories about people literally with wheelbarrows full of cash. How does it actually, I mean, how does an economy like that actually function?
Well, after 2008, when that election disintegrated into chaos, the international community did actually insist that we had a coalition government, and Robert Mugabe invited the opposition to join him. So that happened. And probably the most important thing they did was abolish the Zimbabwe dollar, and introduce the American dollar as our currency. So we use that now.
Right.
And that means that on the surface, things look a lot better. You can now go into a supermarket and find anything you want. But the problem is that the root cause of the decline of the economy has not been addressed. And the root cause of the decline of the economy is that agriculture was destroyed, and after that, the industries associated with agriculture, like transport and construction, and those have not been rebuilt. So the economy seems to function on the surface, but we have a huge unemployment rate. And so I don't know how much longer it can go on. For example, last year, the decline in tax revenues was over 30%.
Wow. Wow. And this, your country was a country that had some of the best fertile soil. I mean, I remember reading at one point that it could have, you know, fed many, many, many people in Africa.
We are abundantly blessed. There is no reason we shouldn't be prosperous. We have the potential for huge agriculture. We have enormous mineral wealth. It's a lovely country for tourism. We should be a prosperous country.
How bad is it?
Well, I can only speak about what I experience in the schools. One of the things I do is try to ensure that our poorest pupils are able to stay in the schools even when their parents are struggling. But over the last year, I've been literally overwhelmed by the families who've written me letters, come to see me personally and said, we just can't afford any school fees now at all. Some have left the country. In other cases, one or other of the parents has gone overseas to earn money and send it back. But despite all that, our numbers are down by about 20% at the moment. We're the lowest we've been for a long time, which shows me that people are struggling more than any other time I can remember.
Mm. You know, you just sort of wonder how much longer sort of this swirl down into, you know, economic chaos can last.
I thought we'd reach rock bottom several years ago. I honestly don't know how the economy continues to function. For some years, it was protected by the fact that Zimbabwe discovered a huge diamond deposit, and that paid for a lot of things, but that's pretty much been exhausted. So I don't think the government has many other options until someone decides to do what needs to be done to rebuild the economy from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned yesterday in your talk, though, that you really do have great hope, and which, you know, was encouraging to hear, Chris. But on the other hand, I was shaking my head, wondering how on earth you could find, you know, a diamond of hope in this mess.
Yes, it's quite. There is an unpredictability about the world, isn't there? Which means that even the gloomiest forecast can prove wrong. I look back at 2008, where things were absolutely disastrous, where there was no food in the shops, where the salaries we paid our teachers were worthless within a day or two, and somehow we got through that. And as a Christian, I do believe that God is never shaking his head and saying, this is a problem too big for me to solve. And I honestly have stopped trying to prophesy the future, but I'm grateful for the fact that we got through the worst year 7 years ago. We're still there now. And so who knows what the next year will bring. I don't want to assume that it will bring total disaster. Unexpected things may happen.
You also spoke yesterday about the need to, even in the bleakest of situations, to continue to fight. What did you mean by that?
Yes. I think that 14 years ago, when things became bad, we had expected that there would be political change pretty quickly, and that that would resurrect the country. And I don't see any signs of that happening in the near future, though they may. But what I've realized is that many Zimbabweans are saying, we don't need to wait for political change to find hope. Instead, wherever we are placed, in a school, hospital, business, little mine, a home, we can do what we believe to be right. We can follow standards of truth and justice and reconciliation and believe that in that little place, change can happen. And if enough people do that, little people in little places, then that does bring an inevitable impetus towards change that transforms a country even while the politicians fail us.
I heard you say yesterday, and I hope I'm wrong on how I interpreted this, but I thought I heard you saying yesterday that even after Robert Mugabe is gone, and he's 90 years old, and it's incredible he's, you know, still alive and still in power, but that there are other people that are ready to move in and take his place who sound like they're going to continue what he's been doing. Did I hear you wrong on that?
That is a possible scenario. And as I said, I've stopped trying to prophesy the political future because I've been wrong in the past. What's happening right now is that the opposition has been pretty much sidelined very cleverly. And there is a struggle for power between two factions within the ruling power party. It is quite possible that the army will effectively take control and the decline will continue. But it is also possible that the people within those struggling factions will be forced to face reality, to see that it's to no one's benefit, not even theirs, that the economy continues to decline, and will take the action that's necessary to do the right thing. And I suppose that's where we hope that the West will use a carrot and stick approach to make sure that happens. So, yes, there are two scenarios. One is a collapse into anarchy, and the other is that when someone new comes to power, at least the logjam is shifted, and hope that that person sees things clearly.
Just two other questions I have. Have you ever been tempted to just, I mean, there must be an incredible brain drain that's happened in your country.
Yes.
Were you ever tempted to just leave and go somewhere else and not deal with this?
Absolutely, yes. I've often wanted to live anywhere except Zimbabwe. But really, I've been thinking that through over the last 2 years, and I'm now convinced I don't want to leave for various reasons. One is it's been home for almost all my life, and it's a beautiful country with wonderful potential. Second, this is a community that has struggled together to find a future over many years, and it's a big privilege to be part of a community like that and face these issues together and find hope together. And thirdly, while there's hope, I don't want to miss out on the day that things change. So I'm now, it's no longer a sort of feeling of self-sacrifice. It's really where I want to be.
How have you been able to speak out and still be able to talk to us today?
I don't think there are many people saying what I'm saying, including some very prominent people. So a couple of times when I've been overseas, people have come to warn me, but I suppose it's important to live without being controlled by fear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, I'm not sure I should ask this question, but I will anyway. So as a man of faith, how do you explain what has happened to your country?
That's a hard question. Well, there's a human way of explaining it, and that is, as you were asking me at the beginning of this talk, it didn't start with Robert Mugabe. We've had 130 years of discrimination between races and tribes. We've had 130 years of different groups trying to protect themselves and their own interests. And God doesn't usually protect us from the consequences of our own actions. So one could say in many ways we're reaping the harvest that we've been sowing. But I suppose the other thing I would say, and maybe the more important thing, is that I believe that usually God defeats evil not through violence and war, but through letting evil run its course and destroy itself. It seems to me that that happens often. And possibly that's what's happening here.
What can we do to help?
Well, I must say that I've been in Vermont for much of the last 2 weeks, and I've been amazed and encouraged by the knowledge that people have here of the situation, their interest and concern, and that in itself helps. I'll be able to go back to Zimbabwe and say, don't think that people in the United States are not interested. They are. The second thing I'd say is Zimbabwe is a perfectly safe country for people to visit, so come and see what's happening. But the last one would be there are organizations which are working without restriction to help people in Zimbabwe face this current situation, and to donate to those causes makes a real difference to people in the situation that they're facing today.
Any in particular you want to mention?
If you'd like to look at the... Thank you for asking that. If you'd like to look at the website called friendsofpetraschool.org, that would show you one way that it's possible to help young people of all backgrounds in Zimbabwe find hope for the future.
Thank you for your time this morning. Thank you for coming to Vermont. Thanks for educating us, too. I appreciate it very much.
Mark, thank you for your questions and your interest. We appreciate that a great deal as well.
Reverend Christopher Hingley works in Zimbabwe. He is the rector of the Petra Schools in a city called Bulawayo. As you mentioned, it's a beautiful country. Victoria Falls is there, but so much more, such a rich history and really just an incredible fertile land that has unfortunately just had great suffering. All right, a moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for an outstanding local printer who can help you with everything from posters, maybe some nice new letterhead, maybe you need one of those trifold brochures done here, and they can, anything that requires ink and a little bit of paper, they can magically make happen. You do have to do the projects yourself. They won't do those for you. It's sort of like, you know, you got to do the book report yourself, but they'll type it up for you. And if you ever are doing your memoirs, they could publish those and make it look like it came out of Random House and not something that came out of your basement. And if you'd like to get more information about this fabulous company, you can reach them at 229-9335, 229-9335. Yes, they're on the web, jetservice-envelope.com. Please make sure you put that hyphen in there. I don't even know where that might lead you. It might lead you to some, you know, jet plane manufacturer for all I know. So make sure you get that hyphen in there, jetservice-envelope.com. All right, jetservice-envelope.com. Nice. Nice job, Mark. 229-9335. After I tell you to put the hyphen in, I leave it out. 229-9335, because, you know, you leave that hyphen out, you just don't even have any idea where you might go. All right, 229-9335 and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Would you like to know about a good internet service provider, too? How about our friends at gmavt.net? That's short for Green Mountain Access. You could call them toll-free right now, and you could do that at 1-888-321-0815. Yeah, they've got a web presence, too. No hyphen required. gmavt.net. They are a division of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom, so I guess division sort of has that little hyphen with the two dots, one on top, one on the bottom there. And if you are in that service area of that fine company, you can talk to them about bundling your services into one incredibly affordable package. And again, 1-888-321-0815 on the web at gmavt.net. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Please join Fiore Bridal in Essex Junction on November 28th and 29th for a trunk show featuring the exquisite 2015 wedding gowns by Justin Alexander. Every bride who makes an appointment will receive a $100 gift card toward the purchase of her gown. Come visit their beautiful and romantic shop on November 28th and Small Business Saturday for a day filled with memories. Their beautiful shop, unique gowns, and dedicated consultants set Fiore apart from the others. Come see why so many say it's more than a boutique. It's an experience.
On your wedding day, flowers are love's truest language. For over two decades, Jason Munn, a full-service floral event and styling professional, has designed elegant floral accompaniments for weddings throughout Vermont, New Hampshire, and beyond, offering a wide variety of branches, fruits, and flora foraged from the wild, compliment blooms harvested from local flower farms and growers. Bring the bounty of New England's natural landscape to your special day. For more information, visit jaysonmunn.com. Design.com or on Facebook, Jason Munn Design.
Vermont Community Loan Fund borrower and Vermont business owner Bob Light talks about the Vermont Community Loan Fund.
When my wife Lee and I wanted to expand our Hollister Hill Farm bed and breakfast and to expand our farm store, we looked around for a loan. Traditional lenders weren't interested in our business plan. Then we heard about the Vermont Community Loan Fund. The loan fund looks at lending differently. It isn't just about the bottom line. It's about building Vermont's future, Vermont's businesses, and jobs.
The Vermont Community Loan Fund is a mission-driven lender. We focus on people, not profits. We're lending money to Vermont's small businesses to help them succeed.
The loan fund really looked at the whole picture with us. They saw how we were an asset to Vermont. Now, we're growing and proud to contribute to what makes Vermont work.
If you're looking for a business loan, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, where we look at lending differently. Visit investinvermont.org.
It's official. All Smiles Family Dental Center is Central Vermont's Invisalign preferred provider. To celebrate, we're offering Invisalign for the same price as traditional braces. Affordable financing programs are available. There is no reason not to get the fantastic smile you deserve with comfortable, clear, virtually invisible Invisalign aligners. Now for the same price as braces. Call 476-8700. That's 476-8700 to arrange a free initial consultation or visit myvtsmiles.com. All Smiles on the Barry Montpelier Road. Are you all smiles?
All smiles, all smiles. All smiles, all smiles.
Yeah. you have water damage or soot damage, call SR Services in Montpelier. They're the experts. Don't get discouraged if your home has been damaged by water from flooding or a leaky roof. SR Services has the equipment and expertise to restore the appearance of your home to like new again. They work on tile and grout floors, too. Gray grout lines will be white again, thanks to SR Services. For water and smoke damage or professional carpet cleaning, call SR Services at 223-6577. SR Services, 407 Barry Street in Montpelier, 223-6577.
Among the guests we'll have on the program tomorrow, we'll talk with author James Carroll. Moment of your time for our friends at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, exit 9 in Middlesex. Fabulous place to go for lunch. You could have one of their signature sandwiches. The salami's usually on the menu there on Monday. And also they have great soups available each and every day, too. Always nice to know that as the weather gets a little chillier. Oh, my goodness. What a change in temperature. So stop in that. See our pals at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. It's a nice little place to just hang out and have yourself lunch. You can grab it and go. And you can even pick up sandwiches, you know, first thing in the morning when you head in there at 7 a.m. to pick up all those delicious Danish, those flaky croissants that you're going to pick up, or one of their magical little sticky buns, which don't look very big, but oh boy, do they pack a powerful punch, and they got a load of maple syrup in there too. So check out Red Hen Cafe and Bakery right off of Interstate 89. It's right there at the Middlesex exit. You get off and it's right on Route 2, and it is now at the middle ground there in beautiful Middlesex. So stop it in there soon, and we always appreciate when you say howdy from us here at WDEV. You can stop there for lunch, you can stop there first thing in the morning, and you can stop there on the way home. They close a little bit earlier on Mondays at 4. Usually they close at 6, so you can pick up a couple of loaves of bread or other Vermont food items while you are there. Red Hen Cafe and Bakery right off of Interstate 89, exit 9 in Middlesex. Oh, boy, the John Gruber story is certainly going to make it through another news cycle here. Wow. I mean, these are totally inflammatory remarks that this guy made. There's now a video out, as you heard a caller earlier mention, talking about Vermonters. The comments that he made that were really just the ones that grabbed everybody's attention. He's an MIT professor. He made remarks about a year ago that talked about how the legislation was done. And according to this piece by Ann Galloway and V.T. Digger, the federal law was written, quote, in a tortured way to make sure the Congressional Budget Office didn't score the mandate as taxes. You'll remember that actually became a bit of a Supreme Court case, too. Then he goes on to say the following. This is the one that's really gotten everybody's attention. Lack of transparency is a huge political advantage, Gruber went on. Call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever, but basically that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass. This guy sounds like he's got about the biggest ego on the planet. He calls himself the architect of the Affordable Care Act. Here's what Howard Dean had to say about this. He was on the Morning Joe show on MSNBC. He said the following about John Gruber. The problem is not that he said it, Dean said. The problem is that he thinks it. I'm serious. The core problem under this damn law is that it was put together by a bunch of elitists who don't fundamentally understand the American people. That's Howard Dean. That's, you know, that's a pretty strong comment there. So it'd be interesting to see what the reaction is. The administration, as we were talking about with the Campaign for Vermont folks, pretty dug in on keeping this guy. We had Lawrence Miller on the program last week, and he feels pretty strongly that he wants to see Gruber get the work done, and then it sounds like they're going to toss him over the side of the boat. But that he made the argument that he's one of the few people that can get this done. You heard Tom Pelham say that it could be done by the Vermont state economists. We'll explore that question a little bit as we go along, too. I'd be curious to know if this is something that's something they'd be capable of doing. Because a lot of what's going on are these assumptions of what financing plan, and then you have to test and see what will happen to different parts of the economy. Oh, boy. Imagine that. All right. That's going to wrap things up for today. And thank you very much for joining us on the program here. Thank you for listening to WDEV. I know there are many things out there that compete for your attention, so I'm grateful to get a little slice of that our way. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Hope you join us then. Hope you have a great rest of the day. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of snowy Sugarbush, FM 96.5 in Berry and Montpelier, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury and Montpelier. News is coming your way next.